This is a UK Carcast podcast. This is Behind the Canvas, Episode 1. Fred Wheaton. Hello and welcome to a new series in the UK Carcast family. This one is Behind the Canvas. Regular listeners to UK Carcast will know that I used to do an annual artist special where I used to rope in as many trading card artists as I could possibly persuade to come onto the show to talk about their life, work and influences. It made for something of an unwieldy episode, and I thought it was a bit silly waiting for once a year to bring artists onto the show. So I came up with the idea of Behind the Canvas. Behind the Canvas is going to be something of a more regular show than the annual artist special. Each episode is going to be devoted entirely to one artist, and they're going to talk about, again, their life, work and influences. The conversation may get diverted, as conversations and interviews on UK Carcast tend to do, but I hope it'll be enjoyable and fun for both the participants and for you, the listeners. My first guest is artist Fred Wheaton. For our debut, I have got on Fred Wheaton, a longtime fan of the show. I'm saying that now because I haven't got many and I like hearing about fans of the show. He's also an accomplished artist who's worked on a number of sets for Tops, mainly Wacky Packages, Garbage Pail Kids and Hollywood Zombies. I can say no more than hello, Fred, and welcome to Behind the Canvas.
Hello, Paul. Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on the show at all as a fan of the show, having listened to it for a while now. Also very flattered to be the first subject of Behind the Canvas. This is awesome.
Thank you. Now, I have to admit to not knowing more than the titles of the sets that you've worked on. I think there were a couple of sets of Garbage Pail Kids, or as I believe it's known to the cognoscenti, GPK, here in the UK. But it's much more of an American thing. I've seen a few, like some of the promos and stuff like that, but I haven't got a full understanding of this, so you'll have to forgive me if some of the questions I ask seem somewhat elementary, as far as those cards are concerned.
Yeah, don't worry about that. I had meant to send you sort of a care package of stuff to familiarize you. I got behind on things and I didn't get a chance to do that, but still forthcoming. I do intend to send you some of this stuff to enrich your non-sport trading card collection with some of that crazy stuff.
I'm touched. Thank you very much. People tell me I've been touched, but there you go. Fred, the first question I usually ask artists on the artist special, and I see no reason why I can't extend this to this new series, how did you get your start in the art world?
Well, I was interested in art from a very, very young age. My parents always told me that as soon as I could hold a writing instrument or drawing instrument, I was drawing something. And one of my earliest influences was the Peanuts comic strip by Charles Schulz. That was one of the first things I could point to in my history as being a fan of. I was a fan of Snoopy, Charlie Brown, the whole Peanuts gang. I copied Charles Schulz comic strips, and that's one of the ways I taught myself to draw. And another one of the big influences when I was 7 years old was finding Wacky Packages trading cards. I'd already been exposed to Mad Magazine a little bit, the humor magazine that had been around for 20 years by that time.
This is more than familiar with Mad, yeah.
and loved that. I mean, 7 years old, it's, you know, you're just getting primed for that kind of sense of humor that it loves to poke fun at things, to satirize, to tear things down, poke fun and let the air out of the things that people take oh so seriously. So yeah. The art is what initially, I'm sure, drew me to Wacky Packages, because the art was amazing. It was a set that was intended for kids, intended for my age group. This is, we're talking 1973 when I was 7 years old, and the art was done by, I didn't know at the time, I wouldn't have been able to point my finger at it, but it was done by this great former Pulp magazine artist named Norman Saunders. He did the character work and the cartoon figures and the things that really at that age stood out to me, which was the, you know, the great humorous illustration. And he was just a master in that stuff. He made it look easy, but having tried to follow in his footsteps now, that stuff is incredibly hard to do. And I'm sure that to him it was, we've heard that he thought that was fun to do. He had a lot of leeway to play around, and therefore it was, you know, one of his favorite things to have done. But it was the sort of thing he could probably do in his sleep. Just amazing, masterful stuff, which is incredibly difficult to replicate.
Yeah, it helps that he was the original originator of the style, so he could define what the style was, whereas everybody following on in his shoes has had to emulate or expand upon that, which is a little trickier.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly all try to do our own thing. I mean, we try to be ourselves when we work on the stuff, but the shadow of Norman Saunders is always there, because that's the gold standard. That's what, certainly for the older fans, the fans who are still following them to this day, count myself among them, that's what we have the nostalgic fondness for, and we can't help measuring what's done today against that old stuff.
So. No. He very much defined the look of the set for future releases.
Yeah, exactly. And the next generation on, I mean, the fans of Garbage Pail Kids, they came along a little more than 10 years later after Wacky Packages. And similarly, the primary artist of the first couple series of Garbage Pail Kids, John Pound, who, like a lot of the guys who work for Topps later on, or even in the early days, was in the underground comic scene. Mm. Well, his style and sensibility set the tone for Garbage Pail Kids, and therefore, you know, anybody who comes along and does that stuff now, or has done in the last couple of years, that's the gold standard, that's the thing, everybody, the people who remember them, that's how we're all sort of measured, and we all fall terribly short.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned the underground comic scene there, and obviously you mentioned Mad as being another influence on that sort of thing. These cards were regarded as quite radical in their day, weren't they? I know, I'll be honest with you, I have done a little reading up on this, and they were regarded as radical in their content more than anything else. These weren't the cute cartoon comic strip Sunday Funnies type characters, and they were certainly different from a lot of the cards that had been released up till then.
Yeah, there had been a series of different sets from Topps that were sort of smart aleck humor. You know, it wasn't the first attempt to do something like that, but I think what you had with what happened in 1973, which was really the big heyday of Wacky Packages, and it's hard to explain now how big they were, but they were, I mean, for an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old kid, it was gigantic, and it was all, you know, word of mouth, trading on the school grounds, and because there was no advertising. This was stuff that was just, you found it at the corner candy store, the mom and pop grocery store, even the liquor store at the time, and it was like a secret currency among kids. It's something that instinctively, we all knew that our parents would not approve of. It was this sort of it was subversive in a lot of ways. It was culturally, that was a time in the United States when we were becoming more and more distrustful of our institutions. And we started to, thanks to things like Mad Magazine and certainly a lot of comedy that was going on in the comedy scene, let us know that, hey, we were being sold a dirty bill of goods by Madison Avenue. This was after the hippie era, and, you know, we knew not to trust the man. And this was filtering down to kids, this sort of subversive attitude, which certainly not everybody who made Wacky Packages at the time was a radical hippie or something like that. But there was some of that sensibility in there. I mean, I mentioned the art, Norman Saunders, but I should definitely give credit to some of the other folks who were involved in the genesis of it. Folks like Art Spiegelman, who was very young at the time, Jay Lynch from the underground comic scene. These guys, aside from the finished product, you know, these things had to be written. You know, there was writing behind them, and that's actually how I started getting into it, was writing these things. That sensibility came through, and, you know, any kind of editorial process such as has to go into making these sets is going to filter out some of that radical sensibility. But you can see in some of the early cards that there was some of that, you know, there were references to draft dodgers and hippies and commies and things like that. So it was stuff that was, frankly, over a kid's head, but there was also just the really great art that could be appreciated, the funny art, you know, you could tell that this was cool stuff and that, you know, maybe the parents wouldn't think it was a great thing for you to have them.
Yeah, and some of those cards were aimed, the subject matter, as you said, was aimed really above the understanding, maybe, of some of the kids who were collecting them. But there was something there that told the kids, this is naughty, I shouldn't be having this. But I believe a number of schools did ban them at one point, which is nothing new.
Yeah, I don't think that happened in my school, but I'm sure it did happen with Wacky Packages, because they were a major distraction. That definitely happened with Garbage Pail Kids later, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah.
They were contraband on the schoolyards.
But with Garbage Pail Kids, the difference was that there was slightly more of the gross-out humor rather than the political or the satirical humor in those cards, wasn't there?
I would say that's an accurate characterization. It was like 12 years later, after the heyday Wacky Packages, that we saw Garbage Pail Kids come along, and they were actually a spin-off in a way from Wacky Packages, because there had been this huge craze for Cabbage Patch Kids in the early 1980s.
I vividly remember them.
And it was brutal, because at the time I was in college, so I wasn't really following trading cards so much at the time. I, you know, foolishly went off to start thinking about cars and girls, and left the trading cards at my parents' house. But
you mad impetuous youth, you.
Yeah, silly me. But all things come around. So, of course, you know, I'm back in trading cards. So when Cabbage Patch Kids came along, I had a girlfriend who, I think it was my mom's idea to get one for my girlfriend. So I was in one of those crazy mob scenes when the Cabbage Patch Kids were released to the store, and housewives were stomping over each other to try to get to one of these things when it first came out to the shelf. And I was just, I was like paralyzed. I couldn't even move. I couldn't believe that this was going on. So at the time, I didn't get one. It was a letdown.
I should explain possibly for younger listeners who may not be aware of these things. These Cabbage Patch Kids were soft, squidgy, human-ish, but very, very inflated dolls. And they did nothing. They just sat there and looked vaguely cute in a disturbing sort of way. But a manufacturer was canny in making them have different looks, different hair, different eyes, different clothes, and issuing birth certificates and all sorts of, I won't say what. but there were fights at stores whenever they got stocks in. There were literally people screaming blue murder and fighting and paying over the odds to get these things.
It was crazy, yeah. And that sort of thing, that sort of madness, is prime subject for satire. So,
oh, of course, yes, exactly.
When around this time, I guess the craze had been going on for a little while, and Topps had not put out a Wacky Packages series for a few years. 1985, they revived Wacky Packages, and one of the pieces that was intended to be in the set was a parody of Cabbage Patch Kids called Garbage Pail Kid, and it was a box with a doll in a garbage can, and it was meant to insult Cabbage Patch Kids. And someone, I think the president of Topps at the time, said, well, hey, why don't we just do a whole series? Mm. Because everybody was sick. you know, and anybody who was not, you know, in love with them was sick of the Cabbage Patch Kids. So, you know, let's do this, thumbing our nose, to put it politely. Let's put out these cards that show dolls that look like the Cabbage Patch Kids in maybe some, you know, situations that tears them apart. Some of them were actually pretty affectionate or almost innocent in a way. But like you said, I think you were leading in by saying it was more gross out than the Wacky Packages were, because it was sort of an elaboration of a single parody idea. It was, I think, an escalation maybe of, okay, where can we take this next? And by that time, I think gross out humor was more acceptable than in the day of Wacky Packages, when maybe society was still a little more polite and we didn't talk about those things, or we didn't show, we may suggest that somebody is queasy, but we're not going to show them throw up. But and then Garbage Pail Kids threw that out the window, and you know, you would have kids barfing, or even in later series, the modern series, urinating.
Okay, so that's a brief history of the cards. We need to go back to the brief history of Fred Wheaton and how he became involved with the cards. Oh. How did you first get started on the whole Topps line?
Oh, back to me. Okay, well,
right, so.
Yeah. I had been a fan, like I said, and put the cards away and forgot about them as life went on. I hate to sound like a fickle child, but Wacky Packages were my thing for a couple years, and then I was sort of blown away by a little movie called Star Wars that came along in 1977.
Vaguely. Rings a bell. Yeah. Don't think he did very much afterwards, though, did it?
No, it's very obscure now.
Yeah.
so that was... That's where my trading card money went. I got all the Star Wars trading cards. Still was a trading card guy, but it became Star Wars was my thing, and then I just loved, was a big, big fan of that. Really, you know, by that time, the Wacky Packages stuff had stopped anyway. Time marched on, and I continued doing art all through high school and college. I majored in art, and my dream was to be an artist. You know, to be, I think by the time I got out of college, I wanted to be a quote-unquote fine artist, which means that I graduated with a degree that had no practical application in the real world whatsoever, and just thought, okay, I'm going to be a starving artist without any notion of what, I mean, it sounds very romantic, but the reality of being a starving artist is you starve, and that's not fun. It's not fun at all. So I gave it a try for a while and did some freelance art, did some portrait painting, stuff like that. I should mention that comics were a huge influence on me, too. I got really heavily into comics as a sort of a adjunct to Star Wars, because Star Wars had comics, Star Wars had trading cards, and, you know, you would buy a copy of Marvel Comics Star Wars, and every other page was an ad for the other Marvel comics. So,
of course.
You know, was a natural evolution to get into things like X-Men. And so I knew I wanted to be a fine artist, but I also wanted to be a comics artist. So I worked on comics with my longtime friend named Wayne Wise. We shared a strong sense of how we wanted to do comics. And, you know, we worked on that just for the love of it for many, many years. I wanted to do that. I wanted to paint. I wanted to, somehow make a living with art. And that just didn't really pan out all that well. Eventually I had to, you know, find jobs in the real world and move on from there. In the early 90s, we did make a stab at publishing comics. We got a grant, actually, to publish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got a grant to publish an issue of our comic book.
That'd be Grey Legacy, would it?
That's Grey Legacy, exactly, yep.
Yeah.
The grant.
See, I do my research. I do my research.
I'm very, very flattered, I have to say.
It's a good comic.
Oh, well, thank you. I guess it is online.
Oh, I read it, yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's online. It's cool.
Wow.
So, sorry, I interrupted. interrupted you.
No, that's great. I'm just sinking, you know, that's sinking in. I'm letting it sink in that you read it and liked it.
So you got a grant to get that one.
We did.
Going, yeah?
Yeah, the way the grant came about is that one of the guys behind the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who became, you know, fabulously rich, he wanted to do something with that money. So he set up a grant program for aspiring comics artists. And mm-hmm. I'm very proud to say that my friend Wayne and I, a collaborator, we secured a grant. We put together a package and submitted our samples of the mini comics that we had been self-publishing. And we were one of the first recipients of this grant, which is called the Xeric Grant, X-E-R-I-C. And that still is going on as a program that continues. But we were one of the first four, I believe. There was like a batch of four that got the grant to, it was meant to publish the comic. So that was a high watermark. We did the work, put out our comic, and then the comics market completely collapsed. It was, we were sort of trying to ride waves of self-published black and white comics that were very popular for a time. But then in the early 90s, you know, things sort of fell out and we didn't continue with that. But I always tell myself it's something I'm going to get back to because I still love it. It's still something that I find fun to do and would like to do comics again.
The comic market seems a little healthier now, certainly as far as the independents are concerned. I mean, there's a lot more independents out there and a lot more self-published comic books coming out.
Yeah, it's a great time for comics. I mean, there's so much diversity in the comics market right now.
Mm. Is Grey Legacy something you'd return to or would you come up with a new idea?
I'd love to get back to Grey Legacy. You know, what you have seen is sort of the tip of the iceberg, and we'd spent a lot of time developing the backstory of characters and the universe, and, you know, we had all these, grand generational plans for where the characters were going to go and their kids and, you know, other parts of the galaxy. Actually, my friend Wayne is pursuing it himself. He published a comic this year in that universe. It's called Grey Legacy Tales, and he's continued with some of the characters, and he's actually now doing a newspaper strip for a local college where he, near where he lives.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it is living on. It's something I'd love to jump back in to, but I'm glad that he's continuing it.
That sort of, through no fault of your own, fizzled out purely because of the situation in the comics world at the time, and it wasn't something that was just affecting yourselves or independent comic book companies. Marvel and DC were both struggling under the weight of what was going on in the comics world at that time. How did you then make the leap to Tops?
Well, fast forward, I had been out of art for quite a long time, and I fell in love, got married a woman who's very artistic herself. And by this time, 2004, Topps decided to bring Wacky Packages back. I got married in 2005, so my wife saw these things coming into the house, these boxes of trading cards, which she tolerated with great forbearance and actually some interest. She would look at them and help me open packs, things like that. It had been since 1991 when Topps had done their previous new Wacky Packages series. So 2004 was very exciting. We got new Wacky Packages for the first time in a long time. A lot of us who grew up with them found communities on the internet in the late 90s, early 2000s, hooked up with like-minded people who were of my generation, who remembered these things and loved them. We discussed all the little minutiae, you know, wanted to find out as much about these things as we could. And so when they came back, we were ecstatic. They were on their third series when my wife was going through them with me, and she said, you know, some of this stuff is really good, but some of this art, I think you could do better than this. And prior to that time, it had never occurred to me that this was something that I could participate in because I'd been out of art for so long. And just something, you know, when she said that, it sort of flipped a switch in my head, and I thought, well, yeah, why couldn't I do that? You know, what would be preventing me from doing that? So I used my resources through the message boards to find out as much as I could about how to go about getting in touch with Topps. By that time, someone I'd been corresponding with on the message boards who had broken in already, his name is David Gross, and he continues a major Wacky Packs artist to this day. He was on the boards. I think I actually sort of tried to do it without his influence and try to go and make the connections on my own, but he's certainly been a big help in the time since then. This may be the closest thing I have to an interesting story. In 2005, I knew that the Topps editors were going to be at the New York Comic Con in Manhattan, and I thought, what better way to get their attention than to go in person, bring my little portfolio of these ideas that my wife and I had come up with, and go, you know, just go to them in person and say, hey, what do you think? You know, can we work together? And this was the first New York Comic Con, so there have been a number of them since then, and we now know what to expect. But at the time, nobody knew that the New York Comic Con was going to be so huge. I did not have the foresight to buy a ticket in advance.
Ah.
So I got on a train.
Okay.
I got on a train from Washington, D.C., went to Manhattan just thinking, okay, I'm going to pop in there, no ticket. I showed up, and the show was sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd gone all that way seemingly for nothing, and I was totally depressed, totally deflated by this, and it's, you know, my own stupidity. But I found a convention staff person who was sympathetic to my plight. He was hearing all these terrible stories from people of how they couldn't get into the show. I said, please have mercy on my soul. I have this binder of work that I want to show to the top Tops editors, could you please, I mean, I'm not asking to get into the show, could you please have this make its way to the Tops booth and to this contact person at Tops? He said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And I thought, well, this is a shot in the dark. Who knows if this is actually going to happen? So I gave him a little binder of copies of things we'd come up with, got back on the train, totally sullen, you know, thinking, oh, this was a wasted trip, and oh, what did I do? Well, a few days later, I got a contact email from the Tops editor I'd been trying to meet, saying that, well, you know, the ideas that you sent, they're okay. What else you got? So that was where it started. We started corresponding. I would send ideas, talk on the phone, try to hash out what's good, what's not so good, tweak this, and you could make this funnier. And at the time, I was just sending rough ideas for writing for Wacky Packages, not thinking that I would actually draw them or paint them, because that's the way some of it's done. I mean, some people don't actually do the finished painting. Some people just will write them or do rough designs, and that's what I was doing at the time, was the rough sketches, which it doesn't really matter how rough they are. They could be very rough, as long as you get the idea across. So I was happy, I was able to sell some ideas for Wacky Packages All New Series 4 in 2006. I got some gags, call them gags or concepts, got some things that then other artists went on to paint, do the final art. And I was very, very honored that a couple of them were done by the guy I mentioned earlier, John Pound, who, in addition to being the primary Garbage Pail Kids artist, also had done Wacky Packages, and thought, wow, you know, here's somebody whose art that I'm a fan of drawing my idea. And that was just stunning. But then as the series wore on, as I sold more and more ideas, they said, well, do you want to try to paint something? And I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. Gosh, what would be better than having my art reprinted on a little trading card 2.5 by 3 inches so you can barely read it. But yeah, oh man, I would love that. So I've been fortunate enough since then to have a number of paintings, I think plus count, maybe 10, maybe under 10 paintings reproduced as trading card stickers. And, you know, I just, every time I see one, and we just had a new series come out in August, and every time I see one that has art that I did, it's just still amazing. It's like, I did that? Wow, I did that.
What some listeners might not understand, because obviously a lot of the cards now, the art, there's a lot of art sets now, all art, of all drawn sets. My understanding is that those ones are drawn actual size. So if the card is 2.5 by 3.5, the actual piece of art is drawn as 2.5 by 3.5. I'm getting the impression from what you were saying that this was a larger piece that you worked on and then it was reduced to size, or am I completely misunderstanding?
No, that's true. In original run of Wacky Packages, the art was done at sort of a 5 by 7 size, and that size was dictated by the reproduction techniques at the time. And those of us who tried to follow in those great artists' footsteps continued that, trying to do the 5 by 7, which, even though that's much, much larger than the 2.5 by 3, it's still working small, especially if you like to put a lot of detail in. Tops has more flexibility with that. I mean, they'll work with artists who would like to work bigger. So, you know, I know some of the artists work much bigger than the 5 by 7, but that's sort of the honored tradition size of Wacky Pack art. So
you don't consider yourself a true Wacky Pack artist until you've done it on a 5 by 7.
There you go.
You're old school. You do it on a 5 by 7.
That's right. Funny you mention that, because there is a series called Wacky Packages Old School that's going on now.
What a link.
Yeah. Nice segue. The all new series that started in 2004 and have progressed with you know, some breaks since then, they were aimed not only at the nostalgic collector, but they wanted to snag a new generation of kids. They wanted kids to latch onto these things like they had done when, you know, in my generation. So they did make some appeal toward the older collector, but definitely the primary audience for Wacky Packages that we make, most of them we make, is kids, because you can sell something to the older collector, but they're just going to keep getting older, right? You want to get that new generation in there, to get the new blood, get the new audience. So that's what we try to do with Series 7. Now, something that's aimed squarely at the older collector is the Wacky Packages Old School set, which was the brainchild of David Gross, who I mentioned before. He's the final artist on all the paintings. In the first set, he came up with all the ideas, and really he shepherded the whole thing from start to finish. That set sort of brought sketch cards to the attention of Wacky Packages collectors in a big way.
Right.
We had a series of postcards which had sketches in it. The Old School set had, first of all, it's a limited edition sold only on the Topps online store, and the first edition was limited to like 3,600 boxes, something like that.
Oh, okay, so fairly limited for a Topps set.
Fairly limited, but every box had a sketch card in it, and every sketch card in that set was done by Jay Lynch.
Wow, that's a lot of sketch cards.
That is a ton, yeah. I think it's got to be a record.
Listeners will know of Jay for his work on a number of other sets as well. He's obviously done a lot of the Wacky Packages, but he's been involved in doing promos for the Philly show and for NSU and all sorts of interesting pieces of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's had a relationship with Topps for many, many years. He was instrumental in Garbage Pail Kids as well. Garbage Pail Kids had a sketch card set. They had actually, this was the second one, the one I was involved with.
Yeah.
It was the second time they had done sketches, and the first time They were a little more sketchy, let's say. I mean, I think they weren't as involved because it was new to this mindset. It wasn't something that we had really seen before. So the artists who worked on that set did very detailed drawings, and some of the sketches were almost more doodles with the autograph along with them. And at the time, that was, you know, it was great because that's, you know, nobody knew what to expect. But now I think there's maybe a higher standard to aspire to because sketch cards certainly are, I mean, it's almost insulting to call a lot of them sketch cards because they are these little fully realized pieces of art that they just happen to be done on a smaller scale.
Yeah, collectors have got very picky. So, and the companies are rushing to support that, which is great for the collector because, as you say, it does mean more realized pieces of art. But somehow, in some cases, perhaps the informality of a dashed off sketch, which has perhaps a touch more personality, has been lost in that.
Yeah, I mean, since I've worked on them, I know the appeal. There's an appeal of getting something that is a sketch. I mean, I like the speed of sketching, you know, doing something quickly and yet still have it look pretty good is, it's a hard mark to hit, but speed is often of the essence when it comes to these sets because we don't always have that sort of generous deadline we'd like to have, but there are some of the cards you just can't help spending a lot of time, you know, maybe working it over and over to get the effect that you really want, so.
Yeah. The one set we haven't mentioned so far is Hollywood Zombies.
Yes.
Which is sort of a return to the satirical element that we were discussing earlier with Mad Magazine. What was your involvement on those?
That was solely as a writer and rough artist. I didn't get to do any final work on the Hollywood Zombies, but there was a very strong Mad Magazine connection to the Hollywood Zombies because a lot of the final artists were folks who had done work for Mad. It was a natural fit because with the Hollywood Zombies, you needed to have that caricature, that the likeness of the, you know, certainly scarred and pieces falling off and blood and muscles exposed and bone, but still resembling the celebrity who was being parodied.
I vividly remember there was a promo which I think featured a zombie Paris Hilton, or complete with zombie dog.
Exactly. Yep. It was Paris Hilton, as I recall.
Paris Hilton. There you go. Yes.
It was an attempt to go back to something like a set like Mars Attack. It was really, I'm sure they hoped to make it a franchise thing rather than just a single series, but I don't think it did as well as they probably liked because we haven't seen a series 2. But I was very privileged to be on the ground floor of that. It was very exciting to think we were trying to make something new instead of extending the legacy of something that had been around for a long time. And it was a lot of fun to see how it evolved as it was being developed, as they decided on what sort of art style to follow. And there were certainly a mixture of styles, but it was probably, in a way, more work than any of this other stuff, because with Wackies and GPKs, there's sort of an established, you know what you're aiming for, you know what the goal is. It's sort of well-practiced, you know, you sort of know a good gag when you see one. But with the Hollywood Zombies, it was very much a discovery. You know, we were trying to figure out, well, what works, what doesn't work, and what's the tone we're shooting for. It was really a lot of fun, and if they ever decided to do that again, I'd love to be a part of it.
Yeah. Something I was going to ask you, the Wacky Packages and the Garbage Pail Kids involve stickers. And I assume that there's a different set of criteria involved when you have to design for something that could very well be removed from the rest of the backing. What sort of design decisions have to be made then?
Well, that's true. It is. There's a little bit of a difference. The Wacky Packages, when they were first conceived of, they've always been stuck in some way. The originals back in 1967 is really when they started. They were on cardboard that had a backing that you had to lick in order to stick it anywhere.
Right.
And that didn't really catch on with kids too much. It was.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. It wasn't until they hit upon the peel-off sticker format that it really took off. But I think maybe just to make it so that you didn't have to make a very precise die cut for the sticker, there was a thick black border around each of the images. And that was a design point that dictated the parameters of it. You knew you had to create a thick black border around it, which then they would, you know, make the die cut design from. This is something that's sort of it has been a flaw sometimes, is that because it's so small, you want to make sure it's readable or instantly can be grasped by somebody who is at it. So when you're designing it, you want to, the best thing to do is to pick a popular product, something everybody knows, and make it look as much like that product as possible without infringing on the copyright, you know, fair use, parody law, whatever. So, you know, you make it different enough that it can't be considered as stepping on somebody's copyright, although heaven knows a lot of the companies who were parody thought, it was maybe flattering, but hey guys, you know, please don't do that again. They would send cease and desist letters to Tops, and that's really one of the things that caused them to stop. I mean, aside from the fickleness of kids and sort of growing out of it, was they were just weighed down by all these cease and desist letters from companies, and then it became more and more difficult to parody you know, products, and especially as corporations bought up more and more smaller companies, and all of a sudden, you know, I won't name any names, but say, you know, giant corporation X now owns all these other little brands that used to be independent, and so, you know, you can't touch any of their products.
So that's what you've done in the past. Are you working on anything at the moment?
I am working on another sketch card set, Wacky Packages Old School 2, and I'm in the middle of working on cards for that. Coming up very soon, we have another Garbage Pail Kids flashback set that will be out in February, and I haven't received my cards for that yet, but expect to get them soon and get to work on that set as well.
Okay. Have you ever felt tempted to look at maybe crossing over into some of the other, maybe the TV or movie-related things, or some of the other types of sets that are out there?
I absolutely have thought about that, and the fact that I haven't tried yet is really just a function of being busy with other stuff. I mean, I do have a day job and a beautiful 2-year-old daughter who doesn't necessarily want daddy to be drawing all the time. I'm just sort of waiting for the timing to be right, because I mentioned that Star Wars was a big influence of mine, something I love very much when I was a kid, and I think to somehow contribute to a Star Wars set would be an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So far, I just haven't really even tried. You know, when the timing is right, hopefully I'll have a window and maybe a set will be coming out and I can make that pitch. But so far, I haven't done that. I would like to do, you know, not just Star Wars, but maybe something else, sure.
Well, Tops seems to be putting out a Star Wars set at least a couple of times a year, so there's every possibility that they'll still be doing sets when you're ready to make that leap.
if anyone from Tops is listening, hey, give me a call.
Your website, which is hipsteria.com, and I'll be putting a link up to that on the Carcast website link page. But you have got links to some of your other work as well. You don't just do cards, do you?
In the past, I've certainly done other stuff, and right now the cards are, when I have art time, the cards are what I do. Mm. But I, like you said, I have comic stuff linked to that, and paintings, drawings and paintings that I've done, quote-unquote fine art sort of stuff. But lately, if I'm sitting down at the drawing table, it's probably to do a sketch card, because I got a bunch on my plate.
So, is there anything else you want to mention before we go, or anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I'm on Twitter. I don't tweet very much, but I am on Twitter, and I do have a Facebook page, which, you know, if anybody's inclined to look me up, just under my name, Fred Wheaton, I can be found there. Again, not a lot of time to spend there, but I guess something I'd like to say is I've certainly done commission work, and, you know, we'll hopefully continue to do that in the future. I'm terribly behind, I should say, in getting back to some folks who have made inquiries, and I remember all of you, and anybody who's listening, I haven't forgotten. It's just that with the day job and parenthood and the other sketch stuff that I'm working on, it's been really hard for me to get back to that, and I know I've tested some fans' patience. The fact that I can say that I have somebody who's like a fan is just, you know, boggles my mind. But so it's sort of a public apology to say, you know, I'm sorry. I would like, you know, to get back to doing stuff for fans in the near future.
Okay. So if anybody's interested in taking you up and maybe waiting a little while to get something, then going through your website is probably the best way to contact you, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. My email address is on there, and certainly I you know, accept Facebook requests. And so, myriad of ways. Just don't get discouraged if you don't hear from me right away.
No, okay. Fred, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I'm glad I was able to get you onto this first show. As I say, the whole Garbage Pail, GBK, Wacky Packages arena is a new one to me. Though I know there are a lot of hardcore collectors out there who probably will be screaming at this podcast saying, why didn't you ask him this? Why didn't you ask him that? They are serious fans out there of those sets, aren't they?
Absolutely, yep. They're all wonderful. I won't say a negative thing about any one of them. They're all terrific fans. Thank you. Thank you all.
Are you still an active collector yourself?
I certainly do get every set that comes out, and perhaps maybe to my wife's dismay, I get the boxes, and I love opening pack. Just, it brings back that nostalgic feeling from when I was a kid. Just the a pack of possibility. What could be in this pack? Well, you know, when I was a kid, you knew it was going to be a little slab of hard gum that was probably going to, you know, rip your mouth if you actually chewed it. But just that opening the pack, smelling the gum, and leafing through to see what cards you got. Did I get the last one I needed? You know, I still enjoy that. I still enjoy making sets and some of these stickers. I love sticking stickers in inappropriate places, and hopefully, you know, maybe not necessarily offending somebody, but making somebody stop and say, "Hey, wait a minute," you know.
Yeah. and I dare say the cry still rings out in the Wheaton household. Oh damn, I got another Fred Wheaton card again.
Yeah. Never enough of those. Never enough.
Never enough. You can't have too many Fred Whedon cars.
That's right.
I think you said am I correct? Your wife also contributes to those sets, or she has worked on those sets in the past.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, she was the influence in suggesting to me that I could do it, and
yeah.
We brainstormed ideas together for parodies. I mean, we didn't really talk about too many examples, but let's say you have something like Häagen-Dazs ice cream, and like for example, she came up with the parody name for that we did, which was Häagen Dogs,
right.
The ice cream for greedy canines, and the illustration is a dog snarling, jealously guarding the ice cream and keeping it away from other dogs. Another one I thought was inspired on her part was Listerine mouthwash. Well, Listerine had been parodied a couple of different times, and maybe the most obvious one was Blisterine that had been in the past. You know, the mouthwash that's flaming and will blister you. She came up with Enlisterine, as in enlisting in the military. So,
okay,
it became Enlisterine mouthwash, the mouthwash that makes you an army of one, and it's an illustration of a drill sergeant with the breath wafting out, which causes the enlisted men to cry. And that was, I thought, brilliant. Another example I'll give her credit for. I have to give her credit for. Is there's a soup called Progresso soup, and we were going through the grocery store, and she saw that on the shelf and said, "What about Frogresso, a soup that would have frogs in it?" And I thought, brilliant, that's great, I'll draw it up, and that became a wacky package. So,
yeah, Fred, thank you for taking the time out to chat to me. I know you're busy doing your cards, but and attending to family matters and your day job. Hey, I'm currently in the situation of having what you might call a night job, so that's good. Thank you for coming onto the show, and I look forward to seeing more of your work in future. I shall certainly pay more attention to the world of GBK.
Well, Paul, thanks very much again for having me on. It's been a real treat.
Okay.
And
thank you very much.
You'll edit out all the boring parts.
I will, of course, edit out the boring parts. That's usually me talking, it has to be said, so it won't save us any time, but, you know. I've been talking to Fred Whedon, a Washington-based artist who's worked on a number of top sets, including Garbage Pail Kids. You can find more about Fred at his website, hipsteria.com. My thanks once again to Fred Whedon for agreeing to be the guinea pig for this first episode of Behind the Canvas. I hope you found it entertaining and interesting. I'd be interested in hearing the feedback of listeners. If you want to let me know what you thought of the episode, Twitter is at UK Cardcast. I haven't got a separate Twitter ID for Behind the Canvas. And the email address, if you want to send me an email with your comments, is ukcarcast@googlemail.com. That's ukcarcast@googlemail.com. Next episode should be in a couple of weeks. I'm in the process of editing that now. I've actually recorded ahead of the game. I've actually recorded four people for the show, so I'm in the process of editing those. As and when I put one up, I edit the next one. I am keen to hear from any artists, published or not. I'm not restricting this to artists who've contributed to sets. Any artist that does cards or comics or even animation, I'm interested in opening it up. So if you're interested in coming onto the podcast, please do get in touch. As I say, the email address is ukcarcast@googlemail.com, or send me a DM on Twitter. Behind the Canvas is recorded using Pamela for Skype on a Windows XP PC using a Logitech USB headset. It's edited using Audacity, compiled using GarageBand on Apple Mac G4. MP3 hosting is by the Internet Archive at archive.org. Web services provided by Google Sites, One and One, and Amen World. Email provided by gmail.com. Thank you for listening. And remember, support your friendly artist.